only know about Elo Anna. You even hear no dead way.
Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Our first guests are part of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Language Revitalization Lecture Series. They'll be speaking tonight at 5 p.m. in the Klan House at the Walter Soboloff Building. In the studio with us is Christy Dillingham. She's the Director of Education at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Christy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott.
Nice to see you. Dr. William Wilson, in from Hawaii. Welcome to the show, sir.
Aloha.
It's so nice to see you. And Dr. Kamana, so nice to have you in the studio as well.
Aloha.
Could I get you to please to introduce yourself? Tell us a little about who you are.
Okay, so I'm Kawanoe Kamana, and I am involved in language revitalization through our work in the Ahapunaleo language nests in Hawaii. And both Pila and I have two children who are now in their 30s and who were raised in Hawaiian. And we're real proud of our work that we've been doing for language revitalization back home.
Okay, she just called you Pila. Can you tell us where that name came from?
Pila is the Hawaiian pronunciation of Bill, which is short for William. So, and as she mentioned, we're married. Yes, it's really great to be here and to talk about what we've been doing in Hawaii. The two of us come from a time when things are just beginning, similar to what's happening here with the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian languages. So we're really excited to be here and to share our experiences with the people here.
Okay. And Christy, can you tell us a little bit more about this series and about the details for this evening?
Sure. The Language Revitalization Lecture Series is part of a new series of talks aimed at sharing teaching techniques and connecting language professionals working to perpetuate our native languages. We hope that the lecture series will be helpful to language professionals and students in expanding our shared efforts and progressing the language revitalization efforts going on. This is the third of four lectures. All of the lectures are at 5 p.m. in the Klan House that is inside the Walter Soboloff Building. If you can't make it out to the lecture tonight, we will have it videotaped and then put onto our YouTube channel, as well as we're developing a podcast series to capture all of our lecturers' expertise and more in-depth interview with them.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Kamana, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the language?
Well, when we were in college, I was in college, a couple of my friends called me and said, hey, you know, there's Hawaiian here at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And there's this teacher, Larry Kimura, who's, you know, the guy who's on the radio every Sunday with our older native speakers at that time. And why don't you transfer to UH Manoa? And at that time, I was not really majoring in anything Hawaiian, but I knew that my father was really interested in listening to that program on Sunday evenings with these native speakers. And so I thought, well, okay, yeah, that sounds like something great. So although I was raised in a Hawaiian home with my family, the kind of language that I got was a language when we were scolded or, you know, told what to do, but nothing conversational. And so I wanted to learn our language in that way. This is in the mid-70s, the early 70s, and when Hawaiian language was just getting to be the thing to do. You know, at the time we had music renaissance and Hawaiian music. And so that's how I ended up in Hawaiian language, studying Hawaiian language, and then becoming aware that our last native speakers were alive at that time. I didn't know how close you know, imminent language death, the urgency of rescuing our language was at that time. But as the years went by, we realized that we had to do something about our language in the subsequent years.
And can you take me back to that time a little bit? What was that like for you as maybe a 20-something, early 20-something, finding your language conversationally? What was that like?
Well, we were learning from this book that was written in English by Mrs. Dorothy Kahananui, who was a scholar, Hawaiian scholar, in language, in culture. And all of the classes were using her textbook at the time. And there were just a lot of students signed up for language. And people, because of the music and because of the language, then people were going out to clubs and we'd have live Hawaiian music at the time. And so people were really enjoying bringing it back. So it was like a social movement, I think, at that time. And fortunately for us, we were there with those last Native speakers. And fortunately, we could take them to the radio. And today we have all of those tapes of those interviews during that time. So we're real fortunate to have had to have it now for our students, but to have been there with them at the time.
All right. And Dr. Pila Wilson, how did you get involved with the language?
Well, I'm not Native Hawaiian myself, but I grew up in I was born in Hawaii. I lived there till I was 10, and then suddenly we moved to Europe. And so I had to be with these little German-speaking kids talking to me in German, and they said, "What language do you have in Hawaii?" And I said, "Oh, there is a Hawaiian language." And so it dawned on me that I didn't know the language. And so from that time, I was interested in learning it as kind of like a hobby. And when I came back to Hawaii, later on when I was in high school, I tried to learn it in night school. Also the classes that Kahanui mentioned. The song you played, Gabi Pahinui, was one of those songs and things that were happening at that time, because the Hawaiian music and dance and all had kind of gone out, and suddenly it started to come back. And people got interested in that, and then that led to the language. So anyway, I was taking it on the side as I was majoring in biology. But I ended up meeting Kahanui and kind of got more serious. And we ended up married, and it was kind of bad because I left my biology major and I was saying, what am I going to do? I got married. I got to open a gas station. How can I make it? I can't make a living with this language. But anyway, it ended up that we became teachers of Hawaiian and moved forward with it that way. So I think it's really important for people to know that in spite of having all the students and everybody trying to learn it, nobody was able to really learn it at the time. It was really difficult. It seemed like we just were spinning our wheels and not really learning anything. The music and dance got really strong, but learning to speak the language was a little bit harder.
And would you say the missing link might have been what you're doing now, which is teaching children from the beginning?
Yeah, that's what we kind of figured out. In the 80s, the early 80s, we thought, okay, now the university experience is not cranking out speakers. And actually in Hawaii, we've had a language at the university since, what, the 60s or so, or even earlier than that, yeah. So we thought, well, we have to bring it to the young children and bring old people with babies together and see what happens. And that really got better results than what we were getting just taking college courses. Of course, in order to have second language speakers, you have to have a strong university program. And then to have them involved in the schooling of young children and supporting the native speakers. So kind of like a team together and with families. And that's what we figured out when we decided that we wanted to try setting up a program, the Punanaleo preschools.
And can you tell us what those look like today?
Well, we have 12 preschools across our state. And at every site where we have a preschool, we have a follow-up program within the public school system. That's a different, a whole story of its own, as you can imagine. So those families from those communities at the preschool level really comprise the force, the community force that encourages the public school system to provide programming for their children. So it would be very difficult to just start up a program without the parents pushing it.
Okay. And Dr. Wilson, you're a part of this as well. What have been challenges for your organization in the years? I bet there have been many.
Yes. So, well, the first one was that people didn't believe that it could happen. And having lots of criticism and trying to bring people together was difficult. Even our first effort at doing these the preschool idea was called the language nest, where you bring children together and only speak the language. With these preschool-age children, the first time we tried it, the teachers felt sorry for the children and spoke English, and it failed. So we had to close that school down and start again. And then we also had to pick the right people, because sometimes among the elders, they might have something that they didn't particularly get together, work together well, or they came from different communities that had a history of not working together. So we had to be very careful about who we chose. And then our second language speaker students was another group that we had to pick. And then the families, they had to really believe that it would work, even though we didn't have the benefit of someone that had done it before and had actually succeeded. So had to have a lot of faith. So there are a lot of little challenges. And then not having any resources, no books, no nothing. It's just beginning from scratch. No money. There is no money for it. Mm-hmm. And it was against the law.
Yes.
It was illegal to use Hawaiian in schooling from the 1896. So it had been a long time. It was still illegal when we started.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Wilson and Dr. Kamana about their 5 p.m. lecture at the Walter Soboloff Building's Klein House tonight. It's free and open to the public. Dr. Kamana, now, despite these challenges and working hard over the years, what are you most proud of? What are you seeing in the schools that brings you joy?
Well, it's always the young children. You know, whenever we have people come and visit, people are always touched by young children. And I think that young children speaking our language give us all hope about what can happen in the future. I think that's always an inspiration. You never get tired of that. Another thing is the level of perseverance that people have, or I can't say that they have it all the time or that we are always functioning at that level, but when you put the call out, people respond. And people are not always looking at the watch or asking about how much I'm paid. And this helps us really work harder to make sure that we are paying people well and that we are supporting our families in a way that they know that this kind of educational experience is something more than just going to school. But it is about families and it is about community. And I think that our Hawaiian language has really brought our language community together. And also those who are just local people who live and were born in Hawaii can identify with the revitalization of language as really holding on to the Hawaiian culture and the culture of Hawaii for all Hawaii's people, especially those who call Hawaii home. So I think that this language movement has really helped move that way of thinking forward.
And I'm sure you will speak at length about this evening, but what's some of advice from both of you that you like to give communities undergoing language revitalization?
Well, stick to it. That's the first thing, and put the language first. So if you put the language first, you can also take control because you are the people who know the most about the language compared to like the educational establishment or people who might be critics. And the language has to begin with just simple human interaction, especially when you're starting with children. You don't want to teach them all the most fancy things of the culture. They have to be able to go to the bathroom, eat, you know, wipe their face. Just this regular language, but it includes the same grammar that the most fanciest speeches have, is in that basic language of daily life. And so you have to focus first on the simple human aspect of being a member of a community at a very basic level and build from that rather than start at a very high super level. So I think those things are really crucial. We did talk about our problems with our university programs and second language programs. We're not producing speakers, but I think we've improved on those as well. One of the things that people often complain about who are not real aware of this are linguists. You know, they come in and maybe they study and they disappear, but what we did is the two of us, while we were trying to learn Hawaiian, we went into linguistics to learn how we could take things from that to improve language teaching. And I think we did gain some good insights on how to teach Hawaiian rather than just memorizing sentences, how to put it together. And then using Hawaiian to teach Hawaiian once the students in college got to a certain level. So we took what we learned from the children and put it into the university. So their second year of taking Hawaiian, we teach it all through Hawaiian, even though we're still teaching them linguistic structures. We've made up Hawaiian names for it. And it's mm-hmm. So we've kind of learned from both ends to help each other. Adults can learn a lot from children. And so anyway, we've made progress over the years, a lot of mistakes, but we learn from our mistakes.
Dr. Kamana, would you add to the advice?
Yeah, well, I think it's true. Just keep the language of the culture at the front of mind. And when you do that, I think it'll be a more enjoyable journey, a more enjoyable adventure. And to also know that, you know, whenever you have people, you have problems. So expect it. It will come. Yes. And so look at your own culture on conflict resolutions. You know, what are the old ways of dealing with that? Because you're going to have to use those skills, you know, the roles of people that people play. What is an expert? You know, somebody else's expert is not necessarily our expert, you know. Our expert is defined as a what. You know, you have to know what that means. So it's a lot of redefining, I think, what you understand as being true to your mission and your goal, and believe that this is the best that you can do in your own lifetime, because this needs to go beyond our own generation. You know, it's intergenerational. So what you want to pass on is that sense of being intergenerational. And that language does change over time, but it is that language because of certain things, whether it's grammar or, you know, the kinds of words, how we make the words, what they refer to, and not let people's, because people are always going to say, well, so-and-so knows better than so-and-so, or I know better than you. Those kinds of things are what really hold things back. You know, and they're real sensitive things, you know. But I think that if people are humble and have a real sense of truth and integrity and the bigger picture in mind, I don't think there really is much you cannot solve. You know, if you meet face to face, it's another thing with technology. I mean, you cannot depend on that to speak for you. We find that that's true in Hawaiian too, that to meet face to face with each other and talk through things, that's the best way to do things. So stick with it, definitely. So it's always going to get better. And be hopeful and take action and just do things. Try it out. You don't have to be perfect. You know, try it out. Things that don't work, don't do it again. things that work, do it again, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
I want to comment on something that Kona just said about experts. So in a real language community, like, for instance, we're speaking English right now, we don't talk about being experts, really. We just use the language as best we can, and you might be slightly different from me and from her. And everybody's a little different. There's always variety. And then once you start talking about the language, then it becomes a case of what is correct and this. And so talking too much about the language and not enough in the language is what causes a lot of the problems. So use it. Use the language no matter where you are in the level. And eventually you'll get better. And pay attention to how people talk. And if someone – people usually recognize someone as being a better speaker and they try to copy them, but not – spend the time talking about who's better and who's worse, and use it. Don't analyze it.
Okay. Christy, you're a longtime educator. This sounds like some pretty great stuff. We should go see it tonight.
I would encourage everyone to come out regardless of the weather. You know, the Juneau School District has recently passed their language revitalization policy in August. So there is a lot of movement. There's a lot of efforts. There's a lot of enthusiasm right now in our community. And so anything we can do to learn from our guest here and take their wisdom and take their advice, there's a lot of opportunity to move forward.
Okay, and can you give us the details once more on tonight's lecture, please?
Absolutely. Tonight at 5 p.m. at the Walter Soboloff Building. We'll be in the Klan House. If you can't make it, we will have it on YouTube in about a week, as well as a podcast. And we have one more lecture in our series that's on February 12th.
All right, Christy Dillingham, Dr. Wilson, Dr. Kamana, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Mahalo.
Yeah.
Aloha.
Gunashchish.
Yeah, gunashchish. Kelly, my yo, I can't know him, I knew how.